"Have you always known you were a traveler?" he asked. "How did you get mixed up in all of this?"
"I have always known. I inherited the skill from my mother, who had once been a captive under Qing Shi. When the time came, I sought Qing Shi out to learn from her, to manifest my strength."
Li Min shifted, rising onto her knees and then her feet.
"And now I answer only to myself."
"That's something," he said, hoping he didn't sound as bitter as he feared. "I've spent my whole life trying and failing to reach that place."
For the first time since crossing paths with her, Li Min's expression softened.
"It's not easy for some. I should know. I felt the grinding of the world as it has worked against me. The worth is in the fight, not the conquest. Do not give up."
"I don't intend to," he said.
"But something stands in your way."
"Things are rather complicated at the moment."
"Complicated how?" she asked.
"My life has taken me down a path I did not expect," he said, dodging the root of her question. "I've come so far, but the path ahead of me, the one I know I should take, is at odds with the one my heart believes is right. What's the value of my life if I sacrifice my soul?"
How much easier it was to admit such things to a stranger. And how well she listened as he continued on, his story flowing from him as simply as if he'd cut a vein and let it bleed out. Nicholas would carve a path through hell itself to find Etta and finish answering the question of what their life would be together. That was the only certainty on which he could hang his hope. But there were too many factors beyond his control now, and he felt himself drifting further and further from all of those shining possibilities, which had been a safe harbor for his heart. In his life he had been a slave to no man, and now he grew more and more certain that he had allowed himself to become a slave to death. There was no way to break this chain that bound him to the Belladonna without staining his soul. In killing a man, he would murder his own honor and decency. Li Min considered his story carefully, as if turning over each word to examine it and see what might be hidden beneath it.
"I understand. There is the journey you make through the world, the one that aches and sings. We come together with others to make our way and survive its trials," she said. "But we are, all of us, also wayfarers on a greater journey, this one without end, each of us searching for the answers to the unspoken questions of our hearts. Take comfort, as I have, in knowing that, while we must travel it alone, this journey rewards goodness and will prove that the things which are denied to us in life we'll never create a cage for our souls."
Nicholas closed his eyes, drawing the damp, cool air into his chest, easing the fire there.
"I will return shortly with food and clothing," she said. "If you leave this spot, you will be lost forever to the darkness of this place. I will not find you, not even to bury your rotting carcass. Do we have an understanding?"
"We do, ma'am," he said.
"Keep watch over her," Li Min said. "Her color is returning, but it will be some time before she regains use of her legs. She will be frightened upon waking."
"And you think I'm the best one to comfort her?" Nicholas scoffed.
Sophia would rather accept the tender ministrations of a rabid dog over him. Li Min seemed genuinely confused by this.
"But you don't care for her. Why, then, did you fight so hard to save her?"
Is that what he had done? Fight for her? Nicholas had felt himself stumbling again and again. Half of his rage had been aimed at Remus Jacaranda. The other half had been reserved for himself. Not just for ignoring his own instincts, but because I nearly let someone die under my protection.
"I require her assistance," he said. "She owes a debt to me."
Sophia made a faint sound, a whistle of a breath between her teeth. Nicholas dragged himself closer, his hand straying down to her wrist to feel for her pulse. It felt steadier than before, and her breathing was no longer labored.
The yellow light of the lantern warmed her skin from its former pallid, marble-like state, and he was surprised to find it reassuring. "I'm glad," he thought, the words jolting him to the core. "I'm glad she's not dead." He'd wished for nothing so much as that in the moments after Etta had disappeared, after Sophia's betrayal. If she'd been standing before him then, he would have reached out and strangled her. Nicholas tore his gaze away, studying the shape of his shadow on the opposite wall.
"I wasn't going with them."
The voice was so faint he might have marked it as another unnatural breeze. Sophia's eyes were closed, but he could see her lips moving.
"Don't speak," he told her, gently laying a hand on her shoulder. "Save your strength. You'll be well again soon."
"I wasn't going with them. Wouldn't have..."
Sophia swallowed hard.
"Wouldn't have gone to the Thorns."
"When?" he asked. "In Palmyra."
Her eyes cracked open and she winced at the light.
"I heard what Etta was saying. What you were saying. About Grandfather. The timeline. I went to steal it back from the Thorns. I would have come back with it. Instead, humiliated."
"Just rest," he told her. "We are safe here."
"That's why. It's my fault. My eye..."
Nicholas straightened.
"You mean to tell me you went with the Thorns to steal the astrolabe back from them? That's why they beat you."
"And because I'm an Ironwood. They thought I was his."
She looked at him from under her dark lashes, her eye patch flipped up to reveal the hollow socket beneath. After a moment, Sophia nodded.
"Kill them. Will. Kill them both. Kill them all."
It had never made sense to him that she'd been so savagely beaten when she'd been a willing participant in the betrayal, riding off with the Thorns. But because of her nature, it had been easy to brush aside and dismiss. Sophia had an unusually potent talent for bringing out the absolute worst in the people around her, and it had drawn out his own ugly, heartless suspicions. He dismissed his doubts with the cruel assumption that she'd said something, done something, to provoke their ire, as if anyone would deserve that fate. Lehman had been so quiet on the stairs that it wasn't until she released a low, pained sigh that he noticed her again. She was at the edge of the lantern's light, but the bleakness of her expression lent itself to the darkness. But she said nothing as she continued climbing. Nicholas reached for the handle of the old, rusted lantern.
"Don't you need this?"
Her voice floated back down to him, soft as a memory.
"I have always found my way in the dark."
Lehman shouldered the weight of the heavy stone cover, pushing it aside. A small chill raced down the steps and made a home inside of the tomb in those few moments before the lid was shut again. He took hold of Etta's earring between his fingers again and worried the metal hoop between his fingers, rolling it back and forth.
"If I die, sorry."
Sophia's voice wasn't even a shadow of a whisper, but he heard her well. He understood.
"Don't be ridiculous," he told her, mimicking her prim tone. "It's as I told you before, in Damascus. You are not allowed to die."
Her answer was silence. "We are, all of us, on our own journeys." Sophia would never be privy to the journey he had undertaken since childhood, to find that freedom denied to him. But as much as Etta was his heart's helpmate, Sophia was the sword at his side on the expedition he undertook now. From this moment on, for as long as their paths were aligned, she would have his trust and his blade to rely on. Nicholas leaned back against the nearest wall, the stone cold against his overheated, sore skin, and closed his eyes. For a moment, he merely breathed in, out, believed, didn't, trusted, didn't, doubted, didn't.
rode the tides of his emotions the way he and Chase used to float on their backs in open water, watching the sky. And in that way, in a city of the dead, he finally slept as the dead did, undreaming and unburdened. 21. There were certain kinds of exhaustion that lingered like a drug in the body, making even the simplest tasks, like lifting one's head from the ground, feel impossible. Nicholas's mind seemed to be in combat with the needs of his body. He startled awake and felt as though he were locked inside a drunken stupor. Soft voices drifted over to where he remained on the ground, curled around his throbbing right hand. The lantern had been dimmed and his eyesight was blurred, but he made out Lehman's shape leaning against the wall, Sophia's head in her lap.
"Is this quite necessary?"
"Very,"
he heard Sophia say. "I am very delicate at the moment, you see."
"I do see," Lehman said dryly.
"Delicate is most certainly a word I would use to describe you, what with how you flee from weapons and faint upon seeing a drop of blood." "I haven't the slightest idea as to what you're implying," Sophia said primly. "I might die yet."
"Oh, dear," Lehman whispered.
"However can I prevent this?"
Sophia seemed to consider it, then lifted her hand from where it had been draped across her chest.
"You ought to check my pulse again, and make sure you count it for a few minutes."
He drifted away again to the sound of Lehman softly counting 1, 2, 3, 4. The next time he woke, it was to screams. They came to him from a great distance, muffled but ripe with agony. In the moment it took his mind to shake off sleep, the voices seemed to transform into a living, breathing thing. Nicholas surged up off the floor, knocking his head against the low ceiling and sending a spray of plaster dust down over his body.
"Shh!"
Sophia was awake and sitting upright, having positioned herself against the wall, her dark eye fixed on him as she struggled to hold up a half-eaten loaf of bread. Nicholas accepted it with ravenous relief, tearing off a chunk for himself. He chewed and swallowed absently, his attention shifting from the much-needed food to the small figure at the base of the stairs. With the sword Nicholas had taken in Carthage in one hand, a dagger in the other, Lehman kept one foot braced on the bottom step, and her eyes fixed upward, toward the entrance.
"What is that?"
he whispered, coming to stand beside her. The screams tore at his nerves, his hands curled at his sides, slick with sweat.
"Who is that?"
"Surely not. The Ironwoods."
"We are being hunted," Lehman said.
Her eyes looked black in the low light.
"Eat, and put on the clothing I've brought you. We will not be leaving in the near future, but when we do move, it will be quickly."
Nicholas ignored her, taking two steps up to better hear the fighting outside. The wet sound of flesh and the piercing yelps somehow permeated even the thickest of stone tombs.
"What? Who is out there? You know, don't you?"
Lehman wiped the sweat from her brow, glancing back at Sophia. With a start, Nicholas saw that Sophia had already changed into a plain white shirt and fawn-colored breeches, and had busied herself with trying to lace up a leather waistcoat. Two pairs of scuffed black boots had been tossed onto another pile of clothing at the center of the room. His, he assumed. The Chinese girl wore a billowy white shirt as well, only she had found thin hose for herself, and a red-plated doublet to be layered over both, and secured in place with a heavy leather belt. They would be traveling as men, then.
"For the love of God, tell us whatever you know," he said. "Please."
"You wouldn't believe it," she murmured. "If it is what I think."
"I believe we are possibly about to be savagely killed, so the time for thoughtful hesitance has sadly passed," Nicholas said. "Do you know who they are?"
"I do. They have been hunting you for as long as I've tracked you. They left a trail of bodies behind them, guardians and travelers alike. All dead. The same as that Linden man in Nassau."
Nicholas's whole body stilled.
There is an evil here that reeks of age and decay, Lehman said, turning to look at him. They will not stop until they have what they're looking for.
And how do you know that? Sophia demanded. Did you use your nose for that as well?
I know, Lehman said quietly, cradling each word as if afraid to release them. Because I used to be one of them.
Pardon? Sophia said mildly.
There is not enough time to explain, Lehman said. They are the shadows nurtured by the Ancient One, stolen from their families as children, their humanity ripped from them with bloody training and manipulation. They are here for one purpose alone, to serve him, to find what he seeks above all else.
Sophia scrabbled along the ground until she found the knife she usually kept tucked into her low boots. She swung it out toward Lehman.
No,
Lehman said, kneeling before her again, letting the tip of the blade press against her heart.
I escaped as a child. My mother was a guardian, as was my sister. I was born able to travel, so the shadows took me to fill their ranks and murdered my family. Witnesses to their existence dig their own graves, you see.
Then how did you escape? Sophia asked, still not lowering the blade.
I was always the smallest, the weakest, Lehman said quietly. The Ancient One felt I was undeserving of the privilege of serving him. One night, when the Elder Shadows were teaching night stalking, I was chosen to serve as prey, as bait. Whoever killed me would receive his radiant blessings.
Nicholas reeled back in horror.
But it was a moonless night, Lehman said, the words tumbling out of her. I slipped away. They never found me again. They have not, at least until now.
I sought Ching Shi out to learn from her, she had said, to manifest my strength. It's all true, then, Nicholas said, fighting not to touch the ring on his hand, to ignore the way it scalded him deep down, at the seat of his soul. From the shadows they come, to give you a fright. Why does this... Ancient One, you said. Why does he want the astrolabe?
Because he believes that he will be granted complete immortality if he consumes its power. He will be impervious to harm and time's ravages, she said. He has prolonged his life by taking the power of the copies, but they were not nearly enough to sate him. He fills the heads of the shadows with promises that they, too, will live forever and inherit the world. They are acolytes as much as they are his servants.
Sophia shook her head, as if she could fling the story away.
No. No. That jacaranda was full of it. Alchemists? Hogwash and horse feathers.
But Nicholas was nodding, rubbing his face, forcing himself to accept this, the way Etta would, in order to move on.
You believe me? Lehman asked. Truly?
He met her gaze in the low light. It was the first time he had detected true vulnerability in her voice. A hopefulness threaded with disbelief.
It aligns with what we already knew. And you've no reason to lie to us. But I imagine few would believe it without this evidence in front of them. Have you ever spoken of this before, then?
She tossed her braid back over her shoulder again, the corners of her mouth slanting down.
I did not think, as you said. The story is impossible to believe for anyone who has not lived it. One cannot go about prattling on about shadows and immortality and such, and be hired for delicate jobs. You see?
I do see, Nicholas said, understanding better now why she worked as a mercenary, rather than inside the fold of the thorns and ironwoods.
A secret was easiest kept by one, or none.
It's all true, Lehman said. And if we cannot escape, then we will never leave this place.
The tortured cries died to whimpers. Li Min placed a finger to her lips. Nicholas held his breath, reaching for a weapon on his tunic's belt that was no longer there. He looked to Li Min, who blatantly ignored him, keeping both weapons in her hands and lowering into a defensive stance. But then his attention was drawn upward again, toward the entrance to the tomb. They sounded as any man's footsteps would in a careful approach. It was only when that same scratching began, that long, continuous drag of sound, that Nicholas realized they weren't hearing anything at all, not through so many layers of old stone. They were feeling the vibrations of the movements. Plaster shook loose from the ceiling, and he wondered, with a sickening twist of his stomach, what could be so heavy as to have caused that?
Li Min, he whispered. Do they use a peculiar kind of weapon? A long, thin blade like a claw?
Yes, she breathed out. They receive it upon their initiation. So you have seen them for yourselves.
They had. They'd struggled blow for blow against them in Carthage, without even realizing it. His hand reached up and closed around the small amulet and at his earring. The shaking worsened, thunder crackling through the walls, making it sound as though whoever these travelers, these shadows were, they were in the tomb beside them. This is hell, he thought. Or all the devils have escaped. The light around him dampened as Sophia reached over and dimmed the lantern. If they died down here, who would be the last of them to bear witness to the other's screams?
Cease this at once, he barked at himself.
My God, he was becoming prone to theatrics in a way that would have made Chase weep with pride. A heap of good that would do him. He'd fight, as he always had. He'd give Sophia and Li Min the opportunity to escape, and then he would follow. He would not die down here in the dark when there was a future to claim. Nicholas could not say how much time passed before muffled voices began to bleed through the walls. He spoke French and Spanish, as well as passable Italian, owing to his time mixing with other sailors in ports. He could speak and read Latin, and a touch of Greek, thanks to the patience of Mrs. Hall. But this was simply too low to make out. Li Min cocked her head toward the door, her face twisting in concentration. For the first time in their short acquaintance, he saw a tremor of helplessness run through her expression, and a lingering flare of hope he didn't know had died out. There was a moment of silence before another sound began to drift through the air, curling against his skin, making his every hair stand at attention. It seemed so out of place that his mind had trouble placing it. Laughter. Sophia pressed a hand against her mouth. Nicholas's skin felt as though it might actually retreat from his bones. The steps grew softer. The vibrations settled from quakes to shivers to nothing at all. He and Li Min exchanged one last look before he released the tension that had wound up his system. He took a deep breath, expanding his lungs and chest until both ached.
Change, Li Min told him. Quickly. We will need to leave before they think to return.
Nicholas nodded, moving back to the pile of clothes.
Do you require assistance with your boots? He asked Sophia.
Her arms and hands were moving again, but he had yet to see the same of her legs and feet. She drew in a sharp breath and, with great effort and enormous swallowing of pride, nodded.
I will do it,
Li Min said, brushing his hands away. He glanced at Sophia, ensuring she was comfortable with this, before picking up the breeches and sliding them on. They were undersized, which might have been a comment on how Li Min viewed him, but was more likely a matter of what was available, what she could steal or purchase without incurring any notice. She herself wore a heavy cloak that served to blot her out of sight. He hadn't considered before how strange it was to have a slight advantage over someone else, in spite of the disadvantages the world had foisted upon him. A dark-skinned man in the Papal City, especially one in simple clothing, would not be nearly as remarkable as a young Chinese woman. The boots were also small, but tolerable. He turned his back to the others for a moment, changed out of the soiled tunic and slipped the soft linen shirt on, tucking it into the breeches. He left his own doublet unlaced, ignoring how short it was on his frame. No one would be allowed to see him long enough to question it. And, well, the world had a way of ignoring its poor and simple. He ran a hand over his face, the rasp of whiskers growing in.
If we should need to fight...
Aim for their skulls, throats, or along their sides just below the ribcage where the seams of their chest plates can be cut, Lehman said. We are safer disappearing.
Is there a passage nearby?
Two upstairs, Sophia said. I can guide us. Help me up, will you?
She reached an arm out. Nicholas and Lehman both moved to her side, but he arrived first, gripping her by the wrist and pulling her upright. And, as it turned out, forward. Her legs gave out, and she gasped in alarm. Nicholas caught her easily enough.
Do you have any sensation in them yet?
Sophia nodded, clearing her throat and blinking, until finally her gaze hardened again.
I might need help, just for a little while longer.
I'm amenable to that, he told her.
His shoulder was aching from the stitches Lehman had put in, but he felt stronger just having rested. His right arm, the one that had plagued him in Carthage, protested in pain as it absorbed some of Sophia's weight, but he tossed that concern aside.
You won't tell a soul of this, not even Lyndon, Sophia said. And you'll carry me on your back, not as some sort of damsel, otherwise I'll cast up my accounts in disgust.
Naturally, Nicholas said.
Not a word, she grumbled.
Not on my life, he promised.
Behind them, Lehman was gathering up their bags, pushing her dark cloak back to loop them over her shoulders.
You're actually coming, Sophia asked. And helping us. It would be so easy to leave us as bait and escape. I may be a mercenary, but I'm not a beast, nor am I an imbecile. I cannot fight them alone. He cannot protect either of you that way, or quickly escape, she said. Not without dropping you first. And you are incapable of running or fighting should it happen.
I wouldn't drop her,
he said, just as Sophia snarled.
I've never run from a fight in my life. If we are leaving, Lehman said, talking over both of them, then let us leave this place. I know the way up into St. Peter's Basilica.
The lantern, Nicholas began.
No, we move in darkness, as they do, Lehman said, taking the first few steps up. Quickly! Quickly!
As it turned out, he did have to set Sophia down to help Lehman lift the cover of the sarcophagus. Almost immediately, the stink of fresh, hot blood assaulted his senses. He heard Sophia gag behind him, her arms tightening around his neck as he bent to pick her up again.
Do you hear that? She whispered.
When he didn't respond, she put his head between her hands and turned to the right. Drip, drip, drip. The air was cool down here, too dry for condensation. A shudder rolled through him, prickling at his scalp, cutting down his spine. Lehman stood off to the side of the grave, her weapons raised, looking up. Up to where Miles Ironwood's body had been stuffed into one of the tomb's alcoves, his unblinking eyes glowing in the dark. Rivulets of blood raced down the wall to the body of a second man, his body contorted as if his back was broken.
Holy God, Sophia breathed out.
Nicholas swung back toward Lehman just in time to see the glint of silver, the dark shape that swung down toward the girl's face.
Lee,
he began, but the girl was already moving, the shorter of her two swords spinning out, catching the arm with a sickening thwack. A gasp split the air as the shadow flew back, and Lehman stooped for something on the ground. When she stood up again, she threw the longer blade his way, only to have Sophia grab it out of the air and slice at the shadows behind them. He felt the reverberations as she struck something solid.
"Who's there?" she bellowed near his ear. "Show yourselves! Show yourselves, you bloody cowards!"
He could see it now, see them. They were a shade darker than the air, until one, a young man with a startlingly pale face, looked up at him from beneath his hood. Nicholas felt himself dissected by the piercing gaze, cut down to his marrow. He took an involuntary step back as ice flooded his system, the backs of his knees bumping into the sarcophagus. In one smooth movement, he pulled the sword out of Sophia's hand and lunged forward, stabbing into the shadow's throat as Li Min had instructed. The hand lashed out, and he had to jump and twist onto the sarcophagus's lid to avoid being skewered by the claw. Sophia released the grip on his shoulders, slamming back against the edge of the sarcophagus. She reached over and pulled the knife off his belt, bracing herself as if to take a blow. Li Min let out a ferocious cry and dove toward the other shadow, a woman with a shock of red hair. She swung her blade around, swirling the disturbed dust as she spun with it, swinging down to try to take off the shadow's head. The other woman was too fast, parrying with a kick hard enough to throw Li Min back a step, but not hard enough to stop her. Rage steamed off the Chinese woman, searing the air, hollowing her cheeks as she opened her mouth and let out another roar. The furious clanging of their blades should have woken the dead. A blade lanced down through the darkness, forcing him to drop to the ground to prevent it biting into the juncture of his neck and shoulder. Nicholas lashed a leg out, trying to upend the shadow, but the man jumped to a nearly inhuman height, flipping back down to catch Nicholas in the face with the full force of his body. A thousand stars burst behind his eyelids, and he was momentarily blinded by the flashing of them. Sophia's shout made him turn just as the shadow's claw would have pierced the inner part of his ear. It caught him over his cheek instead. Nicholas slipped in the pools of blood on the floor, unable to get his feet beneath him. "Damn it all, get up! Get up!" He had fought 100 battles at sea, fended off pirates and boardings. He'd avoided knives to his belly and axes to his neck, and he had survived. Even the fighters hardened by the sea, he'd survived. But the best trained of those men were raging, dumb animals compared to this shadow, who seemed to anticipate his blows before Nicholas decided to try for them. "Etta!" He took a vicious punch to his chest and felt ribs crack. "Etta!" He tried to imagine her the way she'd been on the Ardent, when she'd appeared in the haze of battle. He tried to use that image, like a prayer for strength, to drive his next hit. Yet when his mind's eye drew the memory forward, the scene was cracked between the jaws of darkness. Her screams suddenly silenced, the blood running in rivulets over her face. The clean slice of a claw through her ear. Her body as pale and still as the marble angels that surrounded them. He surged up from the ground, knocking the shadow back. The attacker made as if to lunge forward, but halted, dropping to a knee and howling in pain. Behind him, Sophia had slipped to the ground and cut the tendon of his ankle. Nicholas seized the opportunity at the same moment she did, each of them slicing toward the shadow's neck. The body fell to the ground. Another screech of metal on metal brought Nicholas back around to where Li Min was using her arms, every trembling ounce of strength in her body, to turn the shadow's long claw back onto the woman's body, piercing the soft flesh of her neck.
"I am forever," the woman gasped out.
"You are dead," Li Min corrected, and finished her.
"As are you," came another voice.
Nicholas whirled back toward the entrance of the tomb, his sword following the path of another shadow as he stepped inside. Two more fell in line behind him.
"Little lost one, do you remember me as I remember you?"
He knew she didn't mean to, that it was likely the way the man's voice licked at the air like a snake's tongue. But she stepped back, just a small bit. Her hands gripped her dagger hard enough for him to hear her knuckles crack. Though he knew she would likely despise it, Nicholas felt a fierce surge of protectiveness for the young girl stolen from her family and brought into their darkness, and the young woman who stood before him now, having survived it. The entirety of his right hand lost sensation, and then the rest of his arm. Nicholas barely caught the sword with his weaker left hand, his gaze narrowing on them, as his heart beat a vicious tattoo of fear.
"Li Min," Nicholas said quietly. "Take her and go. I'll catch up to you."
"No,"
Sophia began as Li Min knelt beside her.
Wait, are you...
I have the astrolabe, Nicholas told the shadows. Who will fight me for it?
The flash of Sophia's white shirt at the edge of his vision told him, if nothing else, that they had gotten out of the cramped space. One of the shadows broke off to pursue them, only to be summoned back by the flick of the first man's hand. Nicholas raised his sword, swallowing the blood in his mouth. I will live. It was not a question, but a necessity. He only needed to create a path to the entrance of the mausoleum, and then he could lose them in the darkness. The shadow in front matched his stance, letting the hood fall away from his face. A voice in the darkness began to whisper, to pulse, to grow. The shadows recoiled at the sound of it. Two ducked back through the entrance, vanishing with a soft patter of footsteps.
Liar, the shadow said,
lingering just a moment more before pulling his hood up and following their path. Nicholas staggered forward, using the walls to support himself as he moved. If the shadows had gone left, he would go right, and hope it might lead him to Li Min and Sophia, to the Basilica. But from the depths of the City of the Dead, a voice rang out, as brittle and airy as the plaster dust that swirled around him.
Child of Time!
The words scored down his heart, tugged his attention back. He turned, clutching his numb arm to his chest, and though his tired mind was prone to tricks and his heart wary of them, he could have sworn he saw another figure standing there. The long, pale cloak clasped around his neck flowed down the line of his back, curling at his feet like a cat. It gave his bearing a forceful regality that made Nicholas wish he could summon the strength to turn away again. The distance seemed to close between them, though neither of them moved. And Nicholas saw that his profile was as faultless as if it had been painted by a master's hand. All at once, the ring on his finger began to sing its song of pain, flaring as the man turned his head more fully, his gaze dropping to it. It was only then, when he caught the whole of the man's countenance, that Nicholas saw that his features were like that of a demon, like that of death himself. He turned and ran as if hell burned behind him. 22. It surprised him somehow that a city of the dead would be arranged like an actual city, but here he was, running down dark, winding streets that split the rows of tombs and structures into a grid. When at last his feet found the edge of a set of stairs, he realized he'd begun to climb toward the surface. He was grateful for the challenge of the steps, the warmth that crept into the air as he rose up through the layers of earth and carved stone, and nearly wept at the first sighting of fat candles perched along the wall of a narrow hallway. It meant he was near the end. He was even more grateful to find that Sophia and Li Min were already there, waiting for him.
"What took you so long?"
Sophia demanded from where she sat on the ground.
"Damn you for sending us away!"
Nicholas looked at her as though she'd declared herself recently hatched from an egg. He wiped the stinging line of blood from his cheek, only to find that he was still clutching the sword. His right arm hung uselessly at his side, and he forced himself to quell his fear at the realization, so as not to frighten them.
"I worried for you too, Sophia."
"Ugh,"
she said, crossing her arms and turning away.
"I knew you'd be revoltingly sentimental about this. Forgive the presumptions I made about your character on our first meeting," Li Min said. "I see the sort of person you are now." "Yeah, a bleeding idiot," Sophia muttered. "Are you hurt?" Li Min asked. "Beyond what we can see."
The smell of warm wax coated the air, clearing the lingering touch of decay in his throat and lungs. Nicholas turned back to see if there was a way of barring the door behind them. There was. He slid the latch into place, fully ignoring the voice that told him it wouldn't be enough.
"I saw something," he told them, instead of answering her. "I need to know. I need to understand what it was."
"You saw him. The Ancient One," Li Min said, as if his face alone had revealed it. He allowed you to live?
In that moment, when he'd met the man's gaze, there was no way to describe it, save to say that Nicholas had felt acutely aware of his own years, how they might fit inside the man's palm.
He called them the shadows away, Nicholas said. I haven't the faintest notion as to why.
I did not know he was capable of mercy.
He did not for one moment enjoy the flash of fear he saw trespass on Li Min's face. She continued in a hurry.
Something more is at play here. Where is it that you hope to go? Are you hoping to find the last common year?
She swiped the back of her hand against her forehead, smudging the blood and dust there. Her hands were covered in liquid so dark, it almost looked black. Blood, he realized. That was the traveler's blood. In the rush of their fight and flight, he'd neglected to spare more than one horrified second thinking of the Ironwood travelers who had been killed and left for them to find. Their lives had been reduced to splatters of gore, and they'd become nothing more than a way to taunt the next victims. These shadows could have done the same to any of them, and that put their odds of surviving this in rather stark terms.
Yes, he told her. Did you learn what it was?
1905, she said,
with a look that hinted that she had known the whole time. He was too ravaged by pain and apprehension to care much in that moment.
We can take the passage upstairs, the one that leads to Florence. From there, it will be a voyage, but it should not take more than a few days. What the hell is wrong with your arm? Sophia interrupted.
Without preamble, she reached up, gripping his right wrist and using it to haul herself, at least, to her feet. Nicholas looked away.
It is only sore.
You haven't moved it once.
He could see that Sophia had dug her nails into his hand, but he could not feel it.
What? You mean it's the ring?
Her voice was rising in pitch, and she looked as if she wanted nothing more than to pull the arm out of its socket and beat him senseless with it.
The Belladonna's poison, Li Min said,
taking a turn at lifting his arm and turning it to and fro, as if reading a map.
If you do not complete her task, it will eventually travel to your heart and cause it to seize in the same way. What did she ask of you?
To kill Ironwood, Sophia said before he could.
But why?
Li Min asked, her tone hushed.
Have you met him?
Enough, Nicholas said. We can discuss it along the way to 1905.
Yes, please, Sophia said.
Li Min drew the hood up over her ears, obscuring most of her face from view.
Niceties don't suit you.
They suit almost the entirety of the world, Nicholas managed to think, not say.
This way, then.
Li Min urged them forward again, her cape fluttering down the hall.
You need to do this, Sophia ordered him as they followed. You can't trade your life for the old man's. It's not worth it. Half the world would throw you a parade for it.
Like you'll kill the men who harmed you, he asked.
She turned, staring straight ahead, her jaw set.
That's different. I won't die if I never find those roaches. If you won't do it, I will. The day Cyrus Ironwood gets what he wants is the day my corpse is lowered into its grave.
Ironwoods, he thought, shaking his head, always so eager to shed their own blood.
What happens when the old man is gone? He asked. Will you step up as heir? Expect the other families to fall in line behind you.
All I care about is wiping that smear of shite off the face of this earth and salting the ground that grew him, she snapped. Whatever becomes of the families when he's gone is up for someone else to decide. I want no part of this anymore.
She wants to be free of this. The one person he saw as being an emblem of everything the family stood for wanted nothing more to do with it. Remarkable. Li Min slowed as they reached the next imposing door, pressing her ear against the rough, dark wood. She glanced back, nodding to Nicholas, then pushed the door open, revealing a set of steps that spiraled up out of sight. Nicholas started forward, only to stop again at the sound of a voice floating down to them. He drew Sophia back into the shadows of the nearest wall, his mind trying to spin up possible explanations for what they were doing down there. To be caught now, and in their bloodied appearance. A light moved along the stone wall of the stairwell, marking the man's progress. He appeared sooner than expected. An older gentleman in robes, whose pleasant face went slack with surprise.
"We are..."
Sophia shifted smoothly into Latin.
"We have come to pay our respects."
Lehman's arm lashed out, thumping the priest on the head with the flat of her sword. Nicholas barely managed to step forward to catch him in time, as he wilted to the ground.
"Too slow," she said to Nicholas's incredulous look. "Time to move." "She was right about one thing," Sophia said as she passed him. "You're no pirate, St. Nicholas. Where's that ruthless edge that lets you hack sailors apart on ships?"
"Affronted by this lack of honor," he told her.
She must have rolled her eye.
"Hang honor before it hangs you."
Lehman, at least, seemed to know where they were going. It took Nicholas some time, however, to even realize that they'd entered St. Peter's Basilica and were walking its quiet halls. Sophia had referred to it as the old St. Peter's, and he saw the truth of that immediately. This structure had none of the grandeur he'd witnessed when he and Julian had visited it in search of the astrolabe. But that had been, what, the 20th century? He'd been struck mute by the masters of art who graced its ceilings and walls. It had collected treasures and grandeur over time, the way a traveler family would. This iteration was simple, with stark lines and angles that lacked both a sense of gravity and permanence. Still, it was by no means as humble as the Anglican churches in the colonies, which seemed to pride themselves on being as plain and grim as possible. He glanced up as they passed by a large chapel, its door open just enough to catch the glimmer of rows of candlelight. Beside him, Sophia kept her gaze down, her pace as labored as his own. Nicholas was so deep in his thoughts that he did not notice when she drifted a few steps behind him, stopping.
"Good Lord, Carter," Sophia whispered. "You've been mooning over this damn thing for a bloody month, and now you just drop it willy-nilly."
Sophia held up a familiar gold earring, its small leaves and blue stone shivering with the breeze. Nicholas's hand flew to the leather cord around his neck, his heart slamming up from his chest into his throat.
Hell and damnation!
But the talisman and the earring were still there, secure. He felt the slight weight in his hand. So how? A drumming began in his chest, spreading out and out and out through his blood, until he couldn't quite feel his fingers.
"Surely it's not the same," Lehman said, taking it from Sophia. "Look."
But when placed side by side in his hand, they were almost identical, to the best of an artist's skill and capability. They were a pair. They were... Etta. Nicholas tore away from the others, stumbling back toward the chapel, running down the length of it, finding nothing and no one. He returned to the hall, wild with disbelief and hope, searching for any other hint of her, anything that might tell him where she had gone. Dust stung his eyes, blurring his vision. It choked him, filling his lungs, wringing the last gasps of air out of him. The desperation was intolerable, but he couldn't let it go. Not yet.
"Etta!"
he called, his voice as loud as he dared.
"Etta, where are you?"
"My God," he heard Sophia say. "This is painful to watch. Make him stop, please."
It was Lehman's face that brought his frantic searching to a halt. The carefully constructed cipher cracked as she bit her lip, her eyes darting to the side.
"Surely you are not referring to Henrietta Hemlock?"
"Hemlock," Sophia said, holding up a hand.
"Wait. Henrietta, the daughter of Henry Hemlock."
"Etta Spencer," Nicholas said impatiently. "Her mother is Rose Linden, and yes, Rose told me Hemlock is Etta's father."
"Why didn't you tell me that?" Sophia asked. "You didn't think it was relevant that the leader of the Thorns procreated with the beast that is Rose Linden. My God!
This explains so much. So much!
Li Min could not look at him. Her jaw worked silently, her hands clenching at her sides. Nicholas felt his stomach roll in revolt, and he'd stepped into a trap, and there was no way to free himself from the painful, searing cage of hope.
"Do you know where she is? That's who we've been trying to find. She was orphaned to the last common year."
She closed her eyes, releasing the breath trapped inside of her.
"I do. I am truly sorry. Your search ends here, for she is dead."
New York City, 1939. 23. Etta was not sure how long she stood rooted to that same spot. Terror had such a firm grip on her that it could have pulled the skin off her bones. Julian ventured forward a few steps, waving the soot and ash out of the way as best he could, revealing only more soot and ash.
There's nothing, he said, turning back to her. How is that possible? The buildings. The people.
He wasn't wrong. As far as the eye could see through the smoke, which turned out to be very far, without the hindrance of buildings crowding the park's boundaries, there was nothing beyond the husks of what had once been. If the air cleared, Etta knew she'd at least be able to see the East River. She had thought the destruction of the San Francisco earthquake had been absolute. But this was...
"Oh my God," she said, pressing a hand against her mouth.
She'd been right. This was a third, alternate timeline. It hadn't reverted back to Ironwood's timeline like he must have intended with the assassination. He'd grasped burning, dangerous threads of history and knotted them into something far more sinister. Something unrecognizable. There's nothing left. She lowered herself to her knees, suddenly unable to support her own weight.
"What could cause this?" Julian asked. "Shelling? Aerial bombings?"
"I don't know," she said. "I don't know. We need to go." If it was something worse, like a nuclear weapon, then they'd already exposed themselves to harmful radiation. The thought pushed Etta back off the ground, dried the tears that were beginning to form in her eyes. But when she turned to tell Julian, something else caught her eye. The sweep of headlights cutting through the thick smoke, brushing over them.
"Survivors, call out!"
A voice crackled over a speaker, broken up by either emotion or technology.
"Help is on the way! Survivors, call out if you can!"
"Come on," Etta said, turning back to the passage. "We need to go." Julian shook his head.
"No, Nan, I'm going to find her."
Etta's words caught in her throat. If she'd been in the city, there was very likely nothing left to find. But before they could protest, the headlights found them again, and an engine revved as it raced toward them. Before the vehicle had fully stopped, a man in a full black jumpsuit and gas mask, something that closely resembled what Etta knew as a hazmat suit, leaped out of the back of a jeep and rushed toward them.
My God, what are you doing here?"
The man's voice was muffled by his oxygen mask.
"How did you survive?"
"That chap," Julian managed to get out, "is an excellent question."
Etta knew that she should have steered them back through the passage, but some part of her wanted to know, wanted to see for herself what had become of her city. She should have considered what that would do to her heart. After a while, she stopped looking out at the devastation as the military-issued jeep bounced through the smoldering wreckage, and cupped her hands over her eyes. This isn't right. This isn't right. None of this was right. This timeline. A medic riding with them had given them both oxygen masks, which cleared her head somewhat. Etta winced as he swiped antiseptic over the cut on her arm again, and then turned to the slash across her forehead.
"Say,"
Julian said, his voice trembling slightly as he leaned forward to speak to the driver.
"They figure out who to pin this on yet. We've been a bit, out of it.
Trapped in that basement, you know.
Julian Ironwood, worthless at paddling a boat, but quick with a lie.
I'll say, the driver called back. The Central Powers proudly took credit for their handiwork. Made sure to hit Los Angeles and Washington, too, just to drive the message home.
Etta had to close her eyes and breathe deeply, just to keep from vomiting.
Never seen anything like the Flash when this hit. Millions, just...
The man trailed off. Gone. Etta's mind finished. It was light enough outside that once they approached the Hudson, heading toward what the men had described as a medical camp and survivor meeting point in New Jersey, Etta could see the dark outline of a bicycle and a man against one of the last standing walls, almost as if they had disappeared and left their shadows behind.
Paris and London are still standing, but it's only a matter of time, the medic said bitterly. This was to warn us off joining them in their fight, I bet. They knew Roosevelt was thinking about sending aid or troops over to the Brits, that they'd been gearing up for a fight. So the Central Powers declared war on us. This isn't war, the driver said. This is hell. They knew we'd jump in first chance we got, and so they crippled us. They showed us who's boss.
Etta didn't ask about the government, about the other cities. And she didn't ask Julian about how they would get back to that passage, or what other ones they could reach in this year. Exhaustion swept over her. It stole whatever spark of fight she had left. She closed her eyes on her ruined city.
Almost done, honey, the medic said.
Under other circumstances, she would have hated the endearment, but she was feeling battered, and the man had a grandfatherly quality that reminded her of Oscar, Alice's husband.
You'll need to find a doctor to stitch up your arm when we get there. You hear me?
Etta couldn't muster the strength to nod. Where would she even start? How could anyone fix this? Anywhere, she thought. And with everything I have. The medical camp was set up in Elizabeth, New Jersey, far enough from the blast site in the center of Manhattan to be out of immediate danger, but still close enough to be shrouded in toxic clouds of fumes and dust. To get there, they'd had to drive by cleared fields where the bodies of victims had been brought, some covered with tarps, others not. Etta's breath was harsh in her ears, and she couldn't seem to let go of the image of their twisted shapes, the way the charring had left them looking almost hollow. As much as she felt like she had to be a witness to these atrocities, that she owed it to them to form a memory of their wasted lives, Etta didn't protest when the medic leaned over and covered her eyes.
You don't have to see this, he said. It's all right.
But she did. I did this, she thought. By letting the astrolabe slip away, she was responsible. The thought left her trembling so hard that the same medic had her lie down across the seat to administer an IV. By listening to the radio in the Jeep, Etta learned the following. The attacks had happened 5 days ago. The Secretary of Labor was now the President of the United States, as he'd had the good fortune to be on vacation outside of the district when the bomb struck. And there'd been no decision on whether or not to make peace or declare war.
Is there a registry? Julian asked. A list of survivors from the city?
Not yet, was all they were told. You'll see.
And they did see. The old warehouse that had been converted into an emergency medical facility was wrapped around twice with a line of people waiting to get inside. Many of them, in fact most, were African-American. They too made up the bulk of those coming in and out of the tents that had been set up along the nearby streets. Their rudimentary bandages looked like basic first aid, not actual treatment.
"Why are there two lines?" Julian asked,
sounding as dazed as Etta felt. She turned to see what he was staring at. Two separate booths, both with the Red Cross symbol, both handing out the same parcels of food. But there were two very distinct lines, one for white people, the other for blacks. Etta fought the scream that tore up through her. The whole city was in ruins, millions of people were likely dead, and they still followed this hollow, cruel tradition, as if it accomplished anything other than humiliation. You know why.
she told him. Julian was an Ironwood. He traveled extensively. He had been educated about the history his father had created. And he was acting like none of that was true. Somehow it only infuriated her more.